Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, the Activities of the Prachetas, text number 14. Shut Shamaya Mukhe Raja Samak Prayusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sadayanvitaha Shuchamaya Mukhe Raja Samak Piyusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sadayanvitaha. Shuchamaya Mukhe Rajan Samak Prayusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sadayanvitaha. Shuchamaya Mukhe Rajan Samak Payusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sandayanvitaha. Maharajis. Samak Payusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sandayanvitaha. Shuchamaya Mukhe Rajan Samak Prayusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sadayanvitaha. Shuchamaya Mukhe Rajan Samak Payusha Varshinim Deshinim Rodamanaya Nidade Sadayanvitaha. Shoot by hunger. Shamaya, when she was distressed, Mukhe, within the mouth, Raja, the king, Samaha, the moon, Piyusha, nectar, Varshinim, pouring, Deshinim, the forefinger. Rodamanaya, while she was crying. Nidade, placed. Saha, he. Daya Anvitaha, being compassionate. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter the child, who was left to the care of the trees, began to cry in hunger. At that time the king of the forest, namely the king of the moon planet, out of compassion, placed his finger, which poured forth nectar, within the child's mouth. Thus the child was raised by the mercy of the king of the moon. Better than the trees, obviously. Poor boy. Although the apsara left her child to the care of the trees, it's called a negligent mother, the trees could not take care of the child properly. Therefore, the trees handed the child over to the king of the moon. It must have been very special trees that don't grow on this planet anymore. Thus Chandra, the king of the moon, put his finger within the mouth of the child to satisfy her hunger. 15. Since all of you are very much obedient to my orders, I ask you to immediately marry that girl, who is so well qualified with beauty and good qualities. According to the order of your father, create progeny through her. Purport. Prachetas not only were great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but were very obedient to the order of their father. Therefore, the Lord asked them to marry the daughter of Pramlocha. Next translation. You brothers are all of the same nature, being devotees and obedient sons of your father. Who is their father? What's that? Yeah, King Prachibarhishat. Similarly, and who is his father? King Prachibarhishat. He's a descendant of who? What's that? Who is the descendant of Manu? Manu. Yeah. This is a description of the descendants of Manu. I think previously we went over Dhruva, who's descended from Uttanapad, and his brother was Prachinibarishat. You brothers are all the same nature, being devotees and obedient sons of your father. Similarly, that girl is also the same type and is dedicated to all of you. Thus, both the girl and you, the sons of Prachinibarishat, are on the same platform, being united on a common principle. Purport, according to Vedic principles, a woman cannot have many husbands, although her husband can have many wives. In special instances, however, it is found that a woman has more than one husband. Draupadi, for instance, was married to all of the 5 Pandava brothers. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered all the sons of Prachinibarhishat to marry the one girl born of the great sage Khandu and Pramlocha. In special cases, a girl is allowed to marry more than one man, provided she is able to treat her husbands equally. This is not possible for an ordinary woman. Only one who is especially qualified can be allowed to marry more than one husband. In this age of Kali, to find such an equipoised woman is very difficult. Thus, according to scripture, Kalau Pancha Vivar Jayat. In this age, a woman is forbidden to marry her husband's brother. This system is still practiced in some of the hilly tracts of India. The Lord says, Apritag Dharma, Shilayam Bhuyat Pat Yar Pritashaya. With the blessings of the Lord, all things are possible. Pritag Dharma, meaning occupational duty without difference of purpose, is taught in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is divided into 3 primary divisions, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. The word yoga means acting on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita. 3.9. Jagnat tat karmano nyatra lokayam karma bandhanai tadartham api kondeya mukta sangha samachara. Work then as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and that way you'll always remain unattached and free from bondage. One may act according to his own occupational duty just to satisfy the Yagya Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is called Pritak Dharma. Different limbs of the body may act in different ways, but the ultimate objective is to maintain the entire body. Similarly, if we work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we'll find that we satisfy everything. We should follow in the footsteps of the Prachetas, whose only aim was to satisfy the Supreme Lord. This is called apritak dharma. According to Bhagavad Gita 18:66, sarva dharma prajaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. This is the advice of Lord Krishna. Our only aim should be to act in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Lord. This is oneness or apritak dharma. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskatyade Sitarane. Here are mentions about being equipoised, that generally speaking, Kali Yuga, people are not equipoised. But they're not equipoised in any yuga if they don't know the center of equanimity. And the center of equanimity is service to Krishna. Anything else, our minds will become agitated. Because that's, we ourselves are not the controllers of the illusory energy. The illusory energy is acting under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the law is that if one is not in Krishna consciousness, as Krishna says, nasti buddhya yuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavanaha, nacha bhavyantak shantir, ashantasya kutak sukham. That for one who is not in divine or Krishna consciousness, they can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Indriyanam hi charitam yanmano nu vidyate tadasya harati pragya vayor navam ivambasi. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So what does the boat compare it to in this analogy? What's that? Really, in the verse it wasn't even a mention of a body. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, so even with one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So what's being carried away in the analogy? And what else? The boat. What's that? Yeah, the boat gets carried away. So as the boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind. So it's not a very complicated, it seems very complicated, doesn't it? It's only two things. There's the wind and the boat. And what's being carried away? Obviously the wind's not being carried away, so the boat's being carried away. So as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the, so what is carrying away the intelligence? Yeah, senses which include the mind. There's six senses which include the mind. Even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed, so in order to carry us away, it has to be a combination, not only the senses, but also the mind. So the mind becomes fixed on some particular object, then it carries away our intelligence. Just like Krishna says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, person develops attachment for them. And then there's a whole progression from the attachment, lust, anger, delusion, forgetfulness, and then what happens last? No, before fall down. What's that? Well, we're already crazy. There's no that happened long ago. And after loss of memory? Yeah, intelligence. So is there any difference between the two analogies? I mean, our philosophy is quite consistent. It's not like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna started out in the second chapter. He's saying, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. From lust comes anger. From anger comes delusion. From delusion comes bewilderment and memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one falls down into the material pool. So we've gone from contemplation to attachment. And then it follows. So here the analogy is used. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed, so that's can carry away a man's intelligence. So we have contemplating the objects, becomes fixed, comes attached to it, and then a whole serious progression goes on. Lust, anger, delusion, bewilderment, forgetfulness, loss, and then intelligence is lost. So one verse is more or less just a summary, and the other one is a little bit more, gives a few more details what happens. But the point is that as soon as we're not in Krishna consciousness, we're not going to be very happy. And as soon as we're not happy, we're going to look around for something to make us happy. And generally, we've been trained in modern society, you know, we've been told what will make us happy, although it hasn't made anyone happy, but still, we've been told that it will make us happy. Money will make us happy, and sense gratification, basically that. The very thing that the Veda culture is telling us we should become detached from, that's what everyone's mad after. Therefore, if one is conscious of Krishna, that's the only actual way that one can become aloof from the objects of the senses. It is not that we're not maintaining the body. There's eating, there's sleeping, there's even mating and defending. But it's not just for the idea that this will make us happy, just by eating, sleeping, mating, defending. The idea is, as it says here, that only by watering the root, so we eat, but we eat in Krishna consciousness, we sleep, but we're supposed to dream of Krishna, there is mating, but it's supposed to be for producing children to raise them in Krishna consciousness, and we defend Krishna. We defend our Krishna consciousness primarily. We do what's necessary to maintain ourselves in consciousness of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, Tani sarani samyamya, yukta asitamapara, vishehi asyendriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. The one who controls his senses and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. One who restrains his senses from their objects and who fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. So rather than being drawn away by the impulses of the senses, one should fix one's consciousness upon Krishna. And therefore Krishna says, when we do that, we get spiritual energy. Krishna delivers us by his spiritual potency. And therefore, that spiritual energy makes us aloof from material desires. And therefore Krishna, and we become desirous of dovetailing our desires with that of Krishna, and therefore Krishna utilizes this body, mind, and words in his service under the spiritual energy. So as Krishna takes charge, as we become an instrument for Krishna, as we allow Krishna to utilize this body, mind, and words in his service, then the result is that we're under the influence of the spiritual energy, and we become blissful, and we see actually what's happening. What's going on? We see Krishna too. And if we don't do that, as soon as we forget we're Krishna's servants, then at once we're under the control of the illusory energy and we see all kinds of different things outside of Krishna. And the main thing people see outside of Krishna is duality. This is my friend, friend to my body. This is my enemy, enemy to my body. Because even if one is fully in Krishna consciousness, it's not that everyone will love one. It's not that Ambarish Maharaj did something wrong. And therefore, when Devasa Muni became angry at him, no, he became unjustly angry at him, although Durvasa Muni was faultless. I mean, Ambarish Maharaj was faultless. But he was tolerant. Ambarish Maharaj was tolerant. And when he was attacked by Durvasa Muni, he simply fixed his consciousness upon Krishna. He didn't think, this rascal, he's become my enemy. This is unjust. Krishna, do something about it. No, he simply became tolerant and fixed his consciousness upon Krishna. Therefore, he was a man of steady intelligence. Similarly, when Haridasa Thakur was going to be chastised by the Qazi, he simply was in Krishna consciousness. He didn't object. He said, if you want to punish me, that's up to you, but I don't think I did anything wrong. So here we have Pramlocha being equipoised. But it wasn't that she had some special training, how to win friends and influence people. She didn't take a course in 7 Habits of Highly Effective Women. No, she was fixed because she was Krishna conscious, and therefore whatever she did to please Krishna. So that's actually equanimity. And because she was advanced enough, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Krishna gave her intelligence under all circumstances what to do to actually please him. In that way, there can be equanimity. Otherwise, it's not possible. And it's very difficult. Because even Draupadi, who's the goddess of fortune, when we get more into the details of the pastimes, we find that she was not 100% equal to all her husbands. Supposedly, at least. She kind of utilized Bhima whenever she got into trouble. And Bhima killed, what was his name? Kutachak, who was the commander in chief of Uttara, her father, Uttara. Uttara was his daughter. What was his name? What was that? No. Uttara was the daughter of the king of that particular place, where the Pandavas, they took refuge for a year in his place. It's Uttara was the daughter, I forget his name. What's that? It could be. Anyhow, that Draupadi especially favored Arjuna. But when she had to get something, the dirty work done, she kind of like twisted Bhima around her little finger and kind of do things. Kind of simple mind, relatively simple-minded person, infatuated with Draupadi. Anyhow, but in general, she was a pure devotee, therefore she was equal. She was always Krishna conscious. But there are details in the relationships also. It is not easy to be, I mean, even if you're completely equal in an instrument for Krishna, we're persons and we have our likes and dislikes. Even in the spiritual world, it's not that everyone cooperates with each other in the same way. You have Chandravali's group and you have Srimati Rai Rani's group. And they're apparently at odds with each other, but actually they just increase the flavor of the pastimes. If everything went along as predicted, it would be quite boring living in the spiritual world. You get up every morning, herd out the cows, they always gave the same amount of milk, it came back at the same time every day, the same prasadam was there, and it goes on forever, and after a while I think, wow, this is pretty boring. I think maybe I should fall into the material world and get some, a little excitement down there. No, it's on even the spiritual world, which goes on more or less. The pastimes are always this, regular, but no one remembers that they're regular. But there's variety also. There's different varieties of relationships, especially every person has their personality very well developed, and they have a very special relation with Krishna in all different varieties. Some of the cowherd boys, it says, they're friendly with Krishna. Some of them are submissive. Some of them act as parents to Krishna. Some of them play with Krishna. Some of them joke with Krishna. Some of them are very much submissive to Krishna. So there's endless varieties. Everyone has their own particular relation with Krishna. You don't find two people the same, and you don't find two spiritual souls in the spiritual world and their spiritual bodies exactly the same. And in the spiritual world, because our personalities are more developed, they're actually developed, fully developed, and always increasingly developed, therefore the variety is even more pronounced there. And therefore, we find that it takes a great deal of transcendental intelligence. Only Krishna can actually give us the intelligence how to relate equally with everyone. Actually, when we're fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness on a different platform of experience, we're always blissful and in love with Krishna and everyone. Therefore, we can actually be equal to everyone. Otherwise, as long as we're somewhat identified with this body, there'll always be some tendency towards thinking this person's my friend, this person's my enemy. Most of us are not in the mood of turning the other cheek. Someone hits us on one side and we say, well, can you even it out? No, nor are we actually supposed to be. In other words, in the mood that this is Krishna's body, we should take care of it and protect it also. But at the same time, to actually see everyone equally is not so easy, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, Udharat atmanatmanam natmanam avasadayat atmaiva yatmano bandur atmaiva ripur atmanaha. A man has to elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, but his enemy as well. So as long as the mind is absorbed by the false ego, the mind is absorbed in the false ego, then there can't be any question of controlling the mind. Generally, the mind is absorbed in desires of sense gratification, which absorb the false ego in the material conception of life, utilizing our materialistic intelligence to try to figure out how to gratify the demands of the mind and senses. And therefore, in order to do that, one has to be under the control of the false ego. On the other hand, Prabhupada writes that, or Krishna says, jnana vijnana triptatma kutastha vijitendriya yuktisate yogi samalostras makanshana. A person is said to be absorbed in transcendence and is called self-controlled when he sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, is the same. So Prabhupada writes that one may artificially try to create some equanimity, but he's sure to fail after some time. As they say in English, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names, they get to me after a while. Actually, they used to say, but names never harm me. But actually, if people keep on calling us names, we become disturbed after some time. Even Krishna, in one sense, although Krishna is transcendental, when he was defamed, when Prasena, the brother of Satyajit, took the jewel that Satyajit got and was riding in the forest, as you probably know the story of the Shyamantaka jewel. Shyamantaka jewel was owned by Satyajit. Satyajit actually got it from the sun god, and the sun god got it from Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani got it from Krishna. And the Shyamantaka jewel is actually which jewel? What's the origin of the Shyamantaka jewel? Pankajanya, that's the conch shell. Panchajanya. No, the Kaustubha jewel. Krishna presented the Kaustubha jewel to Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani was taken by the sun god after Krishna left. When Srimati Radharani was going to enter and commit suicide, she entered into the Jamuna, and the sun god took her from the Jamuna and brought her to the sun planet. And then he presented her and the Kaustubha jewel to Satyajit. And Kaustubha jewel became known as the Shaimantaka jewel. And Radharani, who was she in Dwarka? What's that? Rohini? No. Rohini is Rohini in Dwarka and in Vrindavan. Rukmini? No. Satyabhama. Yeah, she's Satyabhama. And who's Rukmini? She's Chandravali. Submissive. So, Satyajit had the jewel, the Kaustubha jewel, and it was giving 84 mounds of gold every day, around 180 kilos or something. Now that is a pretty good amount. Could probably renovate the temple with one day's worth. In any case, Krishna asked Satyajit to present the jewel to Ugrasena, because Ugrasena was the emperor, but Satyajit hesitated, didn't want to do it, because he was a materialist. But Prasena, his brother, one day was riding on a horse to show everyone his jewel, the family jewels. But a lion came and killed the horse and killed Prasena, took the jewel away. And then Jambavan heard about it, came and killed the lion, took the jewel. But Satyajit, he thought that Krishna had taken the jewel away because Satyajit didn't give it to him, so he started to defame Krishna, started to spread rumors. So even people spread rumors about Krishna. So if people spread rumors about you, especially on Facebook, don't be disturbed. It happens to the best of us. But Krishna didn't like being defamed, so he went looking for the jewel, and he found Prasena dead, he found the horse dead, he found the lion dead. Everyone was dead, but the jewel wasn't there. So he traced the footprints to a cave, and there he found, in the cave, Jambavan's little child was playing with the jewel. So Krishna wanted to take the jewel back, but the nurse cried out, Jambavan came. And Krishna fought with Jambavan for 28 days and nights. Till finally Jambavan got tired. Who's Jambavan, by the way? Does anyone know? What's that? No. That's Sugriva is the king of the monkeys. King of the bears. Yeah, and therefore, after the 28 days, finally, he realized that this is Ramachandra he's fighting with, and he surrendered, gave back the jewel, and gave his daughter, whose name was? Jambavati. So, does that mean that Krishna married a bear? And this is Rukmini, how beautiful. And this is Satyabhama. Oh, she's also beautiful. And this is Jambavati. My God. What happened to you? One time, someone asked Prabhupada that. They wrote him a letter. You can see in the database. You know, how did Krishna marry a bear? I mean, you know, Krishna's merciful, but... No, Prabhupada said that Jambavan is not actually a bear. Even if Jambavan is a bear, he might be a bear. But his daughter actually had, who was his daughter in Krishna Leela? Who is Jambavati? She is Lalita. When Lalita became so disturbed after Radharani tried to commit suicide and disappeared in the Jamuna along with Vishakha, Lalita jumped from Govardhan Hill, which was quite a lot higher than it is nowadays. So the sun god used to take his chariot around the universe, and the horses used to stop on top of Govardhan Hill and eat the grass there. So it was quite a bit higher than it is now. In any case, Lalita jumped from the top of Govardhan Hill to commit suicide. And Jambavan was coming by and caught her on the way down and took her to where he was living. So she's Lalita. So she joined Krishna's Leela when Satyajit gave Jambavati to Krishna in marriage. So in Dwarka, Lalita is Jambavati. And she's not a bear. At least not in Krishna Leela, she's not a bear. Anyhow, so the idea is that this equanimity is only possible if we're fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Then we can treat everyone equally, even if some very unusual circumstances are there, where a lady marries five different persons, or how many prachetas there are. I think there is 8 prachetas. But if she's perfectly in Krishna consciousness, she can be a perfect instrument for Krishna in all circumstances. So I'll stop there and thank you. Khala. Pitanya. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. I'm wondering if you said that Radharani wanted to jump into the Jamuna and
Lalita. No, she didn't jump in. She wanted to drown herself in the Jamuna.
And Lalita wanted to commit suicide jumping from the Govardhan Hill.
Yeah.
Are they not aware that they're in the spiritual world that they cannot commit suicide? Or is that a sort of a...
pastimes. I mean, if these things didn't go on, it would be, you know, something missing in spiritual activities. They were so much absorbed in separation from Krishna, they couldn't tolerate it. So, this is in Lalita Madhava. Obviously, Radharani is not going to commit suicide, but she was in that mood. But these things are all arranged by the internal energy of Krishna. Yes.
So Jambavan, he's half man, half bear. Is that what you're
saying? I don't know. It says he's the king of the bears.
Because he's not like ordinary human being.
No, he's the king of the bears. No, he's not ordinary. He was the strongest person in the world, in the universe at that time, or at least in the world. I mean, I don't know, but his daughter was Lalita. She wasn't. You know, born of a bear. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.